The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, The Breast Feeding Conversation We Need to Have. Our boobs are magical, yes, but it's time to break down the good, the bad, and beautiful realities of nursing for both mother and child. Before women ever have their first child, social media and news articles urge them to consider breastfeeding. While it may not be an option for every woman, there are many reasons for new mothers to keep this method of nourishing a child in mind. Breastfeeding can help you bond with your bundle of joy, but the benefits go even deeper. Mom and baby thrive. Breastfeeding or chest feeding babies is associated with a reduced risk of asthma, obesity, ear infections, sudden infant death syndrome, and gastrointestinal infections like diarrhea, says Demetria Martin, a certified lactation counselor with a private practice called the Milk Buds, serving Dallas and Fort Worth, Texas. Moms benefit too. Women who breastfeed have a lower risk of hypertension, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and even ovarian and breast cancer, as compared to those who don't breastfeed, Martin states. These health benefits are why there's a push for moms to try to breastfeed. The World Health Organization advocates breastfeeding for at least the first 6 months of a child's life, while the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that moms nurse for 6 months with continued breastfeeding while introducing appropriate complementary foods for 1 year or longer. Both organizations cite studies showing that the longer a child is breastfed, the greater the health benefits. Nursing is also minimal in cost compared to the price of formula, and it's convenient. There's never any worry about packaging bottles for outings, refrigerating milk, or figuring out ways to warm it quickly. It isn't always easy. Given the health advantages of breastfeeding, some new moms become stressed out and disappointed if their nursing efforts don't go smoothly. Complications can sometimes arise due to oral structure issues of some infants, including those with recessed chins or a tongue tie, which can make it hard for them to latch onto the nipple. Stressful environments can also undermine breastfeeding success. I did run into a few challenges, recalls Natasha Ingram, 39, an essential worker and mother of two from Grand Prairie, Texas. When I went back to work, I struggled with not producing enough milk for my baby. It was difficult to stop and take breaks to pump. For Ingram, getting help from a lactation consultant made the difference. They gave me tips on helping to increase my milk supply, she explains. I set an alarm to remind me when it was time to pump, only drank water and sports drinks to stay hydrated, and ate oatmeal almost every day. I also got a support bra that allowed me to pump hands-free. That meant I could pump and eat my lunch at the same time. All those strategies really helped me to continue nursing successfully. Allow yourself grace. Though breastfeeding can offer significant health benefits, we must be mindful of the messaging around it and reduce the pressure on moms who find it more difficult. What we find is that most new mothers with adequate support, whether from a lactation specialist or other social groups that support breastfeeding, will be able to breastfeed, Martin says. It just takes time to get there. To help ease the tension, she recommends that women who want to breastfeed adjust their approach. Instead of thinking, I want to breastfeed for a year, think, I want to breastfeed feed for one day, she says, and then tomorrow think the same thing. That's how successful habits are created. The next article is titled Indulge. Essence CEO accentuates power, equity, and authenticity as key ingredients for a new kind of soul food for the sisterhood. Like many of you, I love feel good food. If it can be deep fried, coated in powdered sugar, or put on a stick, I'm here for it. These menu items are often the staple culinary artifacts of summer music festivals, and when I consume them, they instantly release endorphins, induce euphoria in me, and minimize any discomfort I may be feeling, which in turn nourishes my overall well-being. I know you are giving me a side eye right now for connecting fried food with better well-being, but hear me out. That positivity from enjoying fried foods coincides with the sisterhood I often associate with summer and attending big events like the Essence Festival of Culture presented by Coca-Cola. While this year's event will once again be virtual, the fellowship will remain. There's something sacred about when Black women gather. It creates a collective joy that reflects how far we've come, seeing as once upon a time in our history, we were not allowed to gather and celebrate. When I think about the idea of a festival, and one as special as EFOC, which brings hundreds of thousands of attendees to New Orleans each summer to celebrate and relish in community, culture, and joy. I think about the beauty and the opportunity to come together and the role that music has played as the soundtrack of our legacy, our ancestry, and our journey. Our sisterhood has become a sacred presence that shows up in everything from a barbecue to a festival. The millions of attendees who have participated in this festival over the years are the catalyst for the celebratory energy that this annual gathering is best known for. And as we all embark upon this year's virtual festival, we are collectively presented with an opportunity to indulge in the metaphorical feel-good food that is Black sisterhood. Last issue in my first A Plate Full of Parsley column, I urge you to say goodbye to the garnish-only meals society has been feeding us and fill your plates with the abundance in life that you so richly deserve. The last 18 months have given us all reasons to pause and reflect on what is most important, including celebrating all of who we are. This is exactly what inspired this year's festival theme, Live Loud. I invite you and your sisters to get together now that we can do it again, not just in service of seeing the people that you love, but in service of the tradition that, no matter what happens, will always be in the place in which we find our joy. And I haven't met a person yet who isn't in need of a little extra joy. Join us and indulge in a celebration commensurate with the experience you would activate consuming the best of fried festival food. As festival food favorites often do for me, my hope is that this experience will bring about the euphoria and release you fully deserve. May you choose to dine empowered on the soul food of what this year's festival means for you, and indulgently reveal in the liveliness of your loud influence on culture, community, and commerce. Celebrating small and living quietly contradicts what our collective sisterhood represents, what we have endured as Black women, and all that we've accomplished thus far. Instead, let's gather at our festival, live and celebrate loudly, and devour the equivalent of the sweet and savory fried delights that make the decision to attend any festival, but this one in particular, worth the effort. You deserve this, and we can't wait to celebrate with you. The next article is titled, Bomb Threat Reported Near Library of Congress, Suspect Surrenders. Suspect reportedly a Trump supporter who spoke of starting a revolution against Democrats on Facebook Live. North Carolina man Floyd Ray Roseberry has been identified as the suspect behind an active bomb threat on Thursday near the Library of Congress across the street from the U.S. Capitol. Roseberry filmed himself on Facebook Live from a truck stating he had a bomb in his hands, threatening that if he were shot, the alleged bomb would detonate two city blocks. From the social media app's live video streaming service, Roseberry ranted against the war in Afghanistan, immigrants, Joe Biden, and other Democrats, which was captured before Facebook took his page down. "This revolution is on," Roseberry said. "It's here. It's today. They keep allowing these illegal Mexicans in here," he said in one live video. "All these illegal immigrants from Afghanistan. You don't have free health care for us. You're giving it to them. Joe Biden, the South is fed up." He also said there were four more people like him around D.C., but he was chosen to do the dirty work of announcing the bombing plan to the public. The aim, he said, was to convince Joe Biden to step down from his presidency. In one moment of cognitive dissonance of many, the suspect claimed he wasn't there to hurt anyone, unlike Democrats, while he continued to hold the alleged bomb in his lap. Government buildings and businesses nearby were evacuated during the ordeal. After about 5 hours of negotiations, Roseberry crawled out of the truck he was occupying and was taken into custody, a ABC 13 reports. The next article is titled, The Importance of Creating Businesses That Are Also Safe Spaces in Our Communities as Entrepreneurs. During the Wealth and Power Experience at the 2021 Essence Festival of Culture, we caught up with three thriving Black women entrepreneurs who shared their experiences and challenges with building businesses that are not only profitable, but serve specific needs in their respective communities. Hoop York City founder Alex Taylor, Ode to Babel co-founder Marva Babel, and Ode to Babel co-founder Miriam Babel joined Essence Deputy Editor Corey Murray for an enlightening discussion, which was presented by Coca-Cola, about their unique beginnings as business owners and how they have worked to ensure that their companies are seen as safe, authentic spaces in their communities. Alex Taylor says she was intentional about thinking of her endeavors as a service to the community first and then later as a business. "It was really around 2020 when I started thinking of Hoop York City as more of a business and introducing merchandise and other things that do incredibly well," Taylor said. "I was really, really lucky to be able to stay afloat through the hardest time for most people, and I was very aware of that. So thinking about Hoop York City as a business, I really wanted it to be a business that also gave back, just because I was so lucky to be able to fall into so many amazing opportunities." Most recently, Miriam and Maya Babel found that making the decision to test out a to-go cocktail servicing during the pandemic allowed them to maintain safe space in their community during a tough time. "We wanted to show our patrons and people who loved us that the experience isn't just about being there present, It's the whole vibe, Mava said. It's the ambience and the people that create it. Miriam also shared one of the many ways they were able to build a new connection with their customer base during the quarantine period. One of the sweet things about the moment, everything was just so unknown and new, and we had staff that didn't want to come in, and we understood that, and we had to respect that, she said. So, myself and our best friends would just deliver a lot of the cocktails to our patrons. I would see them dressed up before, and now I'm seeing them in their robes, masked up. So, we just definitely built that connection with the community, and it was nice. The next article is titled Cory Booker, EPA has responsibility to help pay for bottled water during Newark lead crisis. The Environmental Protection Agency previously determined that filters made the water safe to drink. Democratic presidential candidate Senator Cory Booker is urging the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to offer immediate assistance to Newark, New Jersey, as the city struggles to distribute bottled water during the escalating lead crisis. In a letter, the EPA recommended city officials begin distributing bottled water after recent surveys showed that two of three homes with old lead pipes still contained high lead levels, despite the use of filters. Booker, former mayor of Newark, says the EPA, which previously determined that the filters made the water safe to drink, holds some responsibility for the crisis and should act on it. We urge EPA to identify additional resources to offer assistance in providing bottled water to Newark residents in order to ensure a sustained source of clean drinking water while further sampling is conducted. Booker, U.S. Senator Robert Menendez, and Representative Sires and Donald Payne Jr. said. In 2016, Newark Public Schools shut off water fountains at 30 schools after elevated levels of lead were found, in addition to Flint, Michigan. Poisoned water has also been a hazard in Selma, Alabama, and in Jackson, Mississippi. The next article is titled, Joe Manchin is lone Democrat to support law defunding critical race theory, except it has nothing to do with critical race theory. Joe Manchin joined Republican senators to pass Senator Tom Cotton's amendment to defund teaching so-called quote-unquote, critical race theory, except it's not actually critical race theory. It's hard to say where to start with the following news, whether it's that Joe Manchin was the only Democrat to support an anti, quote-unquote, critical race theory amendment introduced by GOP Senator Tom Cotton, who's had a personal vendetta for over a year with those who even mention American racism, or the fact that the bill has nothing to do with critical race theory, but is being described as such by clueless Republicans, or that this bill actually passed the Senate. Let's just start from the top. Joe Manchin is continuing to operate as an actual Republican, this time joining 49 Republican senators Wednesday to pass an amendment that defunds critical race theory. The amendment would prohibit or limit federal funding from being used to promote critical race theory or compel teachers or students to affirm critical race theory in pre-kindergarten programs, elementary schools, and secondary schools. The problem with this is, as some may have heard by now, is that critical race theory is an advanced field of scholarship that's rarely taught outside of graduate school. It's a relatively new niche field that started among lawyers in the 1970s. If it's taught at all in graduate school, it's most often in law schools. That's where I first was educated in it, and some graduate schools in other fields like education. And even most law school students would say they never came across CRT in their years of legal training. Critical race theory is an advanced course of scholarship that began to examine why legal decisions like Brown versus Board of Education did not actually result in racial progress. It challenged the notion that the law was colorblind and theorized that the law could and did in fact maintain racial hierarchies and white power structures. Experts in the field like Kimberly Williams Crenshaw, Patricia Williams, and Kendall Thomas found inspiration through the work of Harvard law professor Derrick Bell, whose teachings were foundational to develop critical race theory. Rather than teaching about individual laypeople's roles in advancing racism, CRT is specifically focused on institutions and how those in power use the law and other means to maintain racial hierarchies. It doesn't teach people to be racially divided. It shows how systemic decisions and practices throughout America's legal and social institutions continue to do that work all on their own. CRT scholars also examine how to curb this systemic racism. But you wouldn't know this from the flurry of PTA meetings throughout the country, with white parents lamenting the hostile takeover of critical race theory, frantic that their 10-year-old sons and daughters are being taught white guilt. There are multiple facets to CRT that cannot be whittled down to teaching about American racism, but you can be assured it's not a field of scholarship taught in anything below college-level courses. It's like thinking kindergartners are learning calculus. While kids can and should learn the building blocks of math, to call addition and subtraction calculus simply because they involve numbers is deceptive. But that's precisely what right-wing fury is about. It's not meant to be accurate, it's meant to stir the fury on their base. Indeed, some children may be learning about racism in school, but simply learning about racism isn't CRT. Some students may be learning about Jim Crow or white supremacy, but this is just called history. CRT is a distinct body of work, and if legislatures just want to ban history, that makes America appear less stellar than they should just say that. And in the meantime, they should also avoid using the term cancel culture to describe being censored ever again, because these right-wing legislatures are using their actual power and resources to systemically block learning for millions of students. If anything, this simply adds another lesson to the curriculum for CRT scholars to show why their field of study was created in the first place. The next article is titled, Showtime Orders Pilot for, quote-unquote, The Wood TV Series. The show would be based on the 1999 film starring Omar Epps, Richard T. Jones, and Taye Diggs. Deadline reports that Showtime has ordered a pilot for a new television series based on the 1999 film The Wood, which was written and directed by Rick. His credits also include the films Dope, Brown Sugar, and Talk to Me, as well as episodes of The Chi and The Mandalorian. In collaboration with Rick's direction, Justin Hillen will write the pilot and serve as executive producer. The Wood is a comedy based on the 1999 feature film of the same. The original, which starred Omar Epps, Richard T. Jones, and Taye Diggs, followed the lives of three long-term friends over a span of a few decades. Rick's semi-autographical film was co-written by Todd Boyd and also featured Sanaa Lathan, Lisa Ray McCoy, and Melinda Williams. Showtime's new series hopefully will explore friendship and dating from the distinct perspectives of three young Black men born and raised in Inglewood, California, a suburb of Los Angeles. As the city experiences gentrification, the three will have to balance fatherhood, ambition, and loyalty to each other at a time when their companionship is being tested the most. Set in the present day, new complications such as social media are in play for these characters, as well as the loves and lack thereof in their lives. While it is unclear when The Wood is set to debut on Showtime or its cast, the inclusion of Ricks and Hillian gives promise to the future of this series. The Woods pilot will be a production of Paramount Television Studios and also executive produced by David Gale and Van Toffler for Gunpowder and Sky. The next article is titled, Nelly and Girlfriend Chantel Jackson Call It Quits After 7 Years. It's over between rapper Nelly and his long-term girlfriend Chantel Jackson. She revealed that the couple broke up, offering a brief statement over the weekend when a fan asked if they were still an item after noticing a decrease in photos of them together. No, we're not. Just friends, she replied. He actually replied to the news getting out by telling the Shade Room that the timeline of their relationship was actually shorter. Well, actually just 5 years, ended 2019. Haven't been together for the past 2 years, he wrote in a comment. Okay, now y'all know. Hashtag facts. The pair started dating in 2014 when Jackson, 37, appeared on the short-lived E! Reality show The Platinum Life in 2017. She had nothing but positive things to say about their relationship. The best part of being with Nelly is that he always likes to have fun, she said, of the 46-year-old musician. I don't want to be a baby mama. I want, you know, the horse and the carriage, the wedding, the ring, before I have a baby. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes the baby and the baby carriage. The two certainly seemed to be a fun pairing, and it was a significant relationship for Nelly. When he appeared on Dancing with the Stars last year, 2020, despite him claiming they were done in 2019, she supported him, and he talked about how they were working towards making things official. I would not want my life to not have Chantel in it, he said at the time. We have been seeing each other for 5 or 6 years. Anytime you can connect with somebody like that, it works out for the long run. She's sweet, beautiful, and the more we got to know each other, she's just as beautiful inside. Nelly actually said way back in 2016 that they were working on it in regards to marriage, but the rapper is known for lengthy relationships that don't make it to the altar. That has a lot to do with his take on marriage. The thing about marriage to me is I take it very, very seriously. It's something I'm only doing one time, the rapper told People in 2017. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.